Today, I'm going to share a little bit of my own story. And I think I'm going to talk about what I made at my mission to serve women in food production around the world globally, my early experiences which shaped my thinking, and kind of what leadership means to me. But I don't actually really know, because I've handed over the script completely to my dear friend Sarah. So let me tell you a little bit about Sarah Hurd. I first met her when she attended a program I was running in 2012, and as she walked into the room and I looked at her, I kind of had a sense that our futures were going to be connected. Sarah found her mission, her passion for what she wanted to do on this program, and she went on to train as a coach and then a facilitator for the organization I founded. And when she's not supporting women, she's farming organically in North Canterbury with her husband, Andrew. Every year, we have kind of made it a mission to escape together and spend a few gorgeous days just being girls in my small cottage in the Marlborough Sounds. And here we share our love of walking, talking, drinking wine, and swimming. It does feel a little bit weird, actually, getting someone else to interview me, but let's jump in and see where we go. Well, welcome back to Amplifying Us, and today we're turning the tables, and I have my dear friend and a colleague who I've worked with for 10 years, Sarah Hurd, who's joining me to take me on a journey, and I'm not kind of sure the questions she's going to ask, but it'll be really good to unpick maybe some of the themes that have come up in the last 10 episodes of Amplifying Us. And I think she's going to ask me a little bit about my own journey. So welcome, Sarah, and it's a fantastic to see you.
Thank you, Lindy. It's a privilege to be here doing this with you. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to some of those questions that might surprise you.
It might surprise me. Yeah, well, fair enough, because I ask tricky questions of other people, so far away.
So, some of us know that you weren't from a farming background, Lindy, when you married your sheep and beef farmer from Ikitahuna. So what was it like to join a farming family, a farming community?
It was like something I'd never experienced before, Sarah, and I think those early years particularly have really been the catalyst for me changing things for other women when they join farming families or get into food production. So to say it was challenging would be an understatement. I cried probably every night for the first 5 years that I was, you know, of my early married life, and that was really feeling like I didn't belong, that I couldn't contribute, that I didn't know how to add value in particularly my community. I think I was incredibly lucky that I married such a sensitive and a man who really enabled me to do things, but it wasn't easy 33 years ago to find your niche within a family community or a farming family. Women were not really involved in the business. If they were involved in any of the food production part of the business, it was very much as a secondary pair of hands. So we didn't have a really strong role. And I had come from a background where I was a team player. I was very integral in being part of a team, being part of the success of an organisation. So I worked in ICU as a nurse and flew with the Westpac helicopter. And so that was sort of fairly intense, but also very much you knew how you contributed, you knew what you did, and you knew where that added value. So those first 5 years were really challenging for me, really challenging.
How did you overcome those challenges?
Well, a lot of people will know I tell this story, and I sort of tell it as a joke, but, you know, 6 weeks into the marriage, David set me down over the cornflakes and said, you know, based on your last 6 weeks of performance, I think we need to free your future up. And even though that sounds funny and kind of cruel, it wasn't at all, because what he was saying was, I don't have an expectation that you work with me on the farm and, you know, based on the things that have happened in the last 6 weeks, you know, I think I lost 4,000 ewes up the road with a treacherous dog, and you know, riding a bike on a hill just didn't seem to click for me. What he said was, let's work together to find, you know, you married me, but you got the farm. But I don't have that expectation that you have to be a physical farmer. You know, what are the things that interest you? And definitely understanding the business interests me. And yes, I've done the physical work on the farm, but I realised I really wanted to go back and contribute in my nursing career. And that was really a pivotal point, that I retrained and became a Plunket nurse, which is looking after maternal and child health. And that got me out into the community, and it actually got me meeting amazing women. And in those few years of Plunket nursing, I understood the journey that I was feeling was very similar to other women. They felt isolated. They didn't feel that they were contributing. So that helped, that I had, I guess, a role, a job where I was contributing. David was fantastic in really developing my business confidence. So we did a lot of strategy together, and I recognised that I loved strategy and I loved envisaging something in the future. And then some community initiatives sort of came along, or community challenges really came along, where I thought I could contribute. And so initially they were around health and education. And so they did give me that sense of contributing. And I think that's really important for women. How do they add value? How do they contribute? How do they feel like they belong? But, it, you know, it was hard. It was hard being, I guess, a townie, for want of a better word, coming into a rural community, not even having the lingo, the language. And I used to go to the letterbox every week when we had the Farmers Weekly come out, and that was my education piece. And I'd read it from front to cover and understand what was happening out there in the sector. And then I felt, at least when I went to community events, I could contribute to the conversation.
But, you know, you were so fortunate to have a husband who was prepared to, you know, understand what it was like for you, and how you could make it different together. What about for those women in our rural communities who find themselves in that place, but not necessarily with that support in the way that you had it with David?
Well, that became my big quest, Sarah. And when I got the opportunity, probably what we're talking, sort of started my research 13 years ago, and then the Agri-Women's Development Trust, which I founded, just, you know, had its 10th birthday anniversary. That was really the impetus for that. How could we bring women together, let them understand their journey, give them the skills, tools and support to create success for themselves, wherever that managed to be, and in a way bring women together to create a sense of, although we don't talk about this necessarily in the trust, it's a, my personal belief, a sense of sisterhood, of being on a journey with other supportive women, because my earlier experiences were women were not necessarily supportive. And that came out in the research, and certainly when I travel around the world, it's a very familiar theme. So how do we create an environment where women can be supportive, because they are all equally going on a journey, and so they understand and they remove the things that separate us? And so I think that's really important, is remove the things that separate us and bring us together in the things that unite us. And then we get the magic of fantastic feminine relationships where they are in supporting, encouraging, a woman feels seen and heard and acknowledged and empowered.
Mm-hmm. And so how did, you know, a townie go on to found an organisation, a movement for New Zealand farming women? How did you do it, Lindy?
How did I do it? Well, there were lots of steps in that. Self-belief was one, and that didn't actually come naturally, the belief that I could do it. But what pushed me to do it was well, if I fail, we'll be no better off. And I remember literally sitting in an audience, and I can't even remember who I was listening to, but it was kind of a motivational speaker person who'd come to Masterton. And I was listening to his journey, and there was something he said that was a literal light bulb moment for me, where I thought, well, no one else is coming to solve this problem, Lindy. It's up. It is probably up to you. If you have this calling, if you have this, if you see a problem, if you see a challenge, and if you see a solution, and you're the only one that's seen it, it is probably up to you to go and do something about it. And so that started with the research. And then after the research, I really wanted to give that research to other established organisations to take forward. But, you know, most organisations have their own motivators and drivers and reasons for being. And so this research piece around women, it wasn't necessarily what they wanted to accomplish. And I think it would be fair to say they didn't see the opportunity that I saw. Mm. I think people saw the problem, that women were not engaged in decision-making, and whether that was from their own kitchen table to the boardroom, but they didn't see the opportunity of what would happen if we empowered women to do that. And I guess I was so sure of that because, A, I had the research that backed me, but B, my own experiences of being supported and empowered, and then what I was able to do and achieve success through that. And then it was literally a matter of bringing some like-minded people together and starting. And there were three of us, Jane White, Mavis Mullins, and myself. We sat around the kitchen table and we talked about the possibilities. And then we were joined by Sue Urichs. And we kind of just said, let's go, let's start. And it was massive because we started 2010, no funding, beginning a financial global crisis. And there was me and my computer. And, you know, there were some days I would go, oh, I don't even know how I'm going to get to the end of the day. And the hours were so long. I mean, I was working 80 hours a week, unpaid. We had three years of drought on farm. And so I was asking, you know, my husband, could he financially support me traveling around New Zealand? So it was really hard from that perspective. But right off the get-go, our very first program, we got 12 amazing women, that year-long program. And those women really became the first bubble around me to support the ongoing development of the trust and taking that forward in ways that they gave me confidence that it would work. Those women went on, and pretty much all of them got either board positions or totally different, quite big leadership roles in agriculture in New Zealand. And so I could see the success really quickly. And then, you know, within 2 years, we launched our next program. And that's where I met you, Sarah. And, you know, even your own journey, seeing you blossom, seeing you become such a powerful change agent for women, not only in your coaching practice, but as a facilitator for the trust. So getting those first women around you, taking you forward, which really comes back to that whole concept of powerful feminine relationships. And of course, there were strategic partners and developing the programs and developing the team and, you know, all the things that you have to do to make a business successful. But the big success factor for me was and continues to be seeing those graduates of ours supporting one another, supporting us, and changing outcomes within their families, their communities, and their industry.
Lindy, you talked about seeing the opportunity and that you could see the opportunity. And then once the programs got underway, seeing the successes. Did you ever imagine, you know, now that we're 10 years down the track with the Agri Women's Development Trust, that it would be what it is today? You know, was there that vision for what it's become?
Yes and no. So yes, in I thought if we were successful, then that would be the outcome of what happened to a woman. So that was a yes, but no in terms of, I guess, I didn't really think about the recognition we've had, for our work, probably the recognition I've had globally, those things you don't really think about. So that's a no, but the yes is, that's what I wanted for women. So what women were able to achieve, I believed would transform our sector if we got that, I guess, that critical mass or that tipping point that Malcolm Gladwell talks about. So a yes and a no, but it's probably a clumsy answer, but...
We talk a lot about confidence in our programs, you know, giving women confidence, helping them identify how they can build their confidence, what they can do. Tell us about the link between leading and confidence for women.
I think if you don't feel confident, you it's really hard to lead or be in a leadership position. And we'll come back to leadership, because leadership and leaders, they're not necessarily connected. So confidence is paramount to everything. And what still surprises me today is highly competent women who are not confident. And I remember one of the first applications that I did actually for one of our funders, and they initially turned me down and they said, oh, we're not interested in funding unconfident women. And I went, no, these women are highly competent, but they're not necessarily confident in their ability to lead or to see themselves as leaders. And it still remains, it doesn't matter what program we're doing, it doesn't matter where in the world that I travel, confidence for women is a real biggie. And, you know, maybe that's my next research piece, is why we're not so confident, but we got to focus on how do we get that confidence. And so that's the main thing. And I'll never forget, actually, one of my first trustees was a guy called Jack Tarrant. And Jack was on a leadership program with me before we started the trust. And, you know, he was a real inspiration to me, saying, oh, you just start a charitable trust and, you know, that will deliver your outcomes. And so when I did, I said, okay, Jack, you're on this journey with me, mate. And there's some of those very first applications that we looked at for our 12-month leadership and governance program. And he rang me up and he said, what the hell is this big C that is all through the applications? And he was talking about confidence. And it is kind of like a big C. It is like, you know, it's not dissimilar to cancer. It's insidious. It's not necessarily seen by other people, but it is felt by the women themselves. And so paramount in everything we do, it's how do we create that, unleash the confidence that is there. And once that's unleashed, in Siri, you have seen the result of what happens when women can connect to their inner strengths, their inner skills, and their values. What actually happens, and the confidence just completely blooms.
Where should we go next?
So you talk to me about confidence and leading. To me, it's about confidence and leadership. And so, you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about is the difference between leadership and leaders. And leadership to me is the behaviors that you bring to any situation, whereas a leader is more kind of positional, that you have a sense of responsibility to, you know, to an organization, to a group of people. And so all of us can apply better leadership behaviors. And so leadership is about the choices we make when we interact with people. And so I always think about it this way: when we respond rather than when we react. And so when we're responding, we're managing ourselves for the best outcome of others. We're applying leadership, versus if we just react to something, then we're sort of are coming from our own motivators and drivers and our own personality. Leadership doesn't always go with leaders. So mm-hmm. when you get the combination, it's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I have been in positions of when I've been leading, and I know I haven't brought my best self to that equation. And, you know, the journey of leadership is trying to get those two married better together so that, you know, if we do have a situation where we go, you know, I could have done that an awful lot better, is using those skills of reflection, coming back to that person and saying, look, I don't think we ended this on the right note, and, you know, can we revisit this? And so I think if we apply leadership more, then actually what we'll get is we'll get better led farms, better led families, better led communities, and a better led industry.
Mm-hmm. What have been your biggest leadership lessons?
I think it's a series of podcasts, actually, Sarah. So the big thing is using the experiences to reflect on. And, I mean, you know me, I'm really strong on this when I'm teaching leadership to women, is, you know, doing that reflection piece. And that's not just thinking about it in your head. It's using specific tools to write down, because the word is incredibly powerful. And when you see those written words, then there's kind of no getting away from it. And then you can challenge your own thinking. So I think reflection is one thing. When I haven't reflected, when I haven't looked at a situation and really spent some time thinking, did I show up as the best version of myself? Did I show up in a way that actually really enabled and supported other people's success? Then things haven't gone well. Mm. And when I have used some pre-planning going into a meeting, or in a meeting when things have gone a bit pear-shaped, if I've kind of said, hold on, let's unpick what's happening here. How are you feeling? How are you thinking? Not making assumptions. Then we've been able to turn things around. So that first lesson is use reflective practice. You know, when I've done it, it's great, gone well. When I haven't, that's when the things happen that you go, wow, that was not a great outcome. So absolutely, that's the first thing. Second is the busyness and the tasks required when you are leading an organization. And so it's almost like you have your day job, and what I realized is your day job was people and supporting people be successful in the organization. And then almost your night job was actually the tasks you actually had to do. And so when the pressure of the tasks overtook the how people were who were going to do those tasks, I think those were the lessons. Those are the things that went pear shape. So really thinking about, you know, the team you have, the task you have to perform, and the individuals that are going to perform those tasks. And when we can think and separate those out and then, you know, create the action around that, then things always go better. When we're really task orientated, things go pear-shaped. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, sometimes that not asking enough questions, not being curious about what's happening for that person, or what are the assumptions that they have made. And so when I think about some of the things that haven't gone well, I've run on a script of assumptions and I've not stopped to check in that the other person's running on the same script. And it's incredibly powerful when you just literally go, here's what I'm thinking and here's why. What makes you, you know, think that, and what lies behind that? So, you know, using those questions of what we call inquiry and advocacy have been really powerful.
What have been your enablers, Lindy? Because, you know, there's been huge achievement by Lindy over the time I've known you. You know, you have the New Zealand Order of Merit, Next Businesswoman of the Year, named one of the top 10 women in agriculture. You know, what have been your enablers? You've talked a little bit about what you do yourself as a and within leadership, but what has enabled you?
I think without a shadow of a doubt, it's people. So firstly, I have, and everyone in New Zealand knows this, I have a fabulous husband, and we were able, through some really courageous conversations earlier on in our marriage, to find what a partnership looked like for us. And so there have been times when, you know, I have put my aspirations on hold to support David, to support the business, to support our family. And then there are times where he has just absolutely got 100% behind me, where I've been thinking, oh, I don't know if I've got the energy or the bandwidth to actually cope with this challenge. And that quiet support that, yes, you have, you know, what do you have to do that unpicking? So absolutely having a fantastic partner. And then secondly, the relationships that I've created with other women, you being one of those women, Sarah. And a lot of those were on my early podcast. So having those relationships with women who not only go, yeah, I believe you, but also will actually help you over those hurdles. And so, you know, when I started the organization, there were lots of things that I didn't know, but I had this network of women who supported me with knowledge, skills, tools, connections. I mean, I never took that for granted. So for me, people talk about networking, but networking for me is just about creating influential relationships. And it's the give back. So if I have asked of a woman, then I will give to that woman. And I think that is the absolute essence and the magic that can occur when women are in kind of service to one another in a sisterhood relationship. So without a shadow of a doubt, those two things, having a really supportive main person in your life and then having a network of incredibly supported women who not only tell you the great things, but also, you know, I've got a very tight circle of you know, three or four friends who tell me the raw truth, and I feel incredibly safe when they'll go, oh, you didn't really turn up as the best version of yourself, or get over yourself, or come on, you know, you're outside of your integrity. And Melissa Clark Reynolds and I talked about this in one of our first podcasts. Mm-hmm. But that is vitally, vitally important. And I see a lot of women who shy away from that truth of who they are when they're at their worst. But if we can front up to who we are when we're at our worst, then that makes us feel incredibly safe. Because if you trust someone so much for them to say, hey, you know what, Sarah, when you just did this, here was the impact, what was going on for you? Not only do they take you on a journey of really unpicking and understanding that for yourself, it makes you realize that we all stuff up. We are all human. We all have shitty days where we don't bring our best version of ourselves. So it creates that sense of normality around just being human. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And, you know, we've talked about being vulnerable, but I like being human.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes vulnerability, I worry about that a little bit in the context, because I have seen it being an excuse for bad behavior. And instead of being exposed and willing to do the work to create a better outcome, I have seen people use that label of vulnerability for, I didn't bring my best and that's just me, so what? And I think when we're talking about leadership, it's about understanding you didn't bring your best, and the so what is, how am I going to bring my best into this next situation? Or if possible, how I'm going to make amends to what I've just, you know, made a mess of, really.
Yes. So let's talk about Amplifying Us in your podcast that we started this year in 2020. Tell us about that and what inspired you, Lindy.
Yeah. Well, it was a project I think I've been thinking about for the last couple of years as I've stepped out of the operational part of the organisation and thinking and travelled a little bit more around the world and hearing, you know, women sometimes don't necessarily have access to personal professional development. They don't have time, resources, money, you know, whatever that might be. You know, maybe they're in Fiji, maybe they're in Papua New Guinea, maybe they're in America or the Highlands of Scotland. So how could we have these empowering conversations where a woman felt that they belonged in the conversation, and the conversation being all the issues that we need to contribute to in terms of food production, to gain clarity around, you know, who they are and what they want to achieve. And so to me, listening to other women's, you know, braving their journeys, being vulnerable about the things that hold them back, but also the things that project them forward, and also demystifying kind of, to me, what feminine leadership is about. And there is a difference between women and men in terms of leadership. We have to do the same things, but how we do those things, how we incorporate that into our everyday lives as sisters, as mothers, as corporate women, as farmers. So there is a difference there. And the amplification bit is, if we listen to other women's intimate stories around how they are navigating their journeys, then we see and hear something in ourselves that will, I'm hoping, resonates and will give woman confidence to go, I've had an experience like that. I didn't know everybody else felt like that. Or, oh my goodness, so that amazing woman feels the same way as me. And so it's just that whole normalization. And, you know, I totally believe so strongly it's up to us women to create a sisterhood of female leaders to deal with the myriad of complicated issues that we have in terms of food security, climate change, all of those issues. So Amplifying Us is a really small part of that journey of inspiring women to take action.
And I love your question that you have asked each of the women, and I'm going to ask it of you now.
Oh, Lord.
In 15 years' time, what do you want the world to look like? And what do we have to do now so we can get there?
Yeah. So the now, what we have to do now is really easy. We have to act, and we cannot be held back by the belief someone else is coming. There isn't, and it's us. And, you know, the thing that got me through my early years of setting up the trust was a quote from Margaret Mead, you know, never doubt that a small group of citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And so we have to act. We have to find some like-minded people to go on this mission with. So action's the first thing. Not being necessarily worried that it's perfect, but taking some action. The second thing is we do have to disrupt the way food is both produced and distributed around the world. And one of the things I'd like to see in regards to food insecurity is decoupling food from money. And that is a massive, massive challenge. But I do believe it can be done. If I think about all the amazing efforts that are happening around food insecurity and, you know, particularly since COVID, people, you know, contributing to food banks, it feels like the bandage on the hemorrhage. and I'll come, you know, that's my nursing analogy. Whereas I'd like to go, how do we ensure that the right of every New Zealander, of every citizen in the globe has access to food, because food then creates everything. If we don't eat well, we can't function, we can't work well, we can't sleep. For children, they can't be educated. And so if we get that foundation right, then, and I think we can do that in the next 15 years, if we get that right, I think everything else will fall into place.
How do we do that? How do we get that right, Lindy? I'm fascinated. You've got me hooked.
Well, you know, it's like everything. It's identify the problem and then look at what creates that problem. And that is massive because, you know, wealth in the globe is held by a handful of individuals. And we have created businesses, massive global businesses out of food production. And if we go back to the genesis of agriculture was, you know, we were nomadic, we were traveling around the world, we were gatherers and hunters, and then we decided to put down roots, create community. And so we grew the food around us. And so maybe we have to go back to the value of why we started the way we did, in order to unpick where we've ended up. Yeah. Well, Sarah, you've certainly put me under the microscope today. Thank you so much for joining me and making me have a chat. And it was really interesting.
Well, I would like to say thank you for inviting me to do so, Lindy, and also, you know, to thank you for what you started those 10 years ago, for having the courage, having the tenacity to push through the tough times and to start the movement. And I think I probably, you know, speak on behalf of many women in our sector in saying that. So what a great way to finish 2020, listening to Lindy on her own podcast, and onwards and upwards.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Now that was interesting. Turning the tables. And it now feels a little bit strange to unpick my own interview. But a good experience to go through. But something I did really want to clarify with you is my comment around vulnerability. Because I don't want to come across as being negative around the act of vulnerability. More ensuring that we are really true to ourselves and honest and brave enough to complete its cycle. And I think Brené Brown is, without a doubt, the master in talking about vulnerability. And what I really like are a couple of her quotes where she says, vulnerability is not winning or losing, it's having the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome. And it's allowing ourselves through the process of owning our story. And it's the owning of our story which I think we have to do better. And that's really what I was trying to get out. So if you're interested in vulnerability, my goodness, Brené's got some fantastic books. She's got some fantastic podcasts. So, hey, thank you for listening to me today. And really always keen to hear from you the topics that you'd like to listen to, the people you maybe would like me to interview. So wherever you are in the world today, haere.